Welcome to Uprising. Each episode looks inside what it takes to lead the most dynamic and successful cultural movements. Some of them in the business world, some in the social realm, some in politics, and some in between. To see why people start uprisings, what gives those initiatives momentum and keeps them going, and most important, what lessons can you learn from these movements and how to apply them to your business and even personal life. Let's explore the secret to sparking movements that move people into action.
Passionate ideas.
Controversial ideas.
Uprising ideas.
The power is now in the hands of anyone.
To start a cultural movement.
Your movement.
To move the world.
If you work in the marketing, advertising, and media sectors, there's a growing movement underway here in the United States and perhaps elsewhere. Some would say there's a structural shift that both women and men are talking about. I'm Scott Goodson, and this is Uprising. Recently, there's been a lot of scrutiny being given to the lack of women in leadership positions in the marketing, media, and advertising sector. For years, groups like the 3% Conference, which champions creative female talent and leadership in the advertising sector, and other organizations have been pushing for change. But now, it seems that finally something is happening. Nancy Hill is the head of the 4As. The organization that represents the interests and policies that guide American advertising agencies. I asked her to help us understand what's going on. One of the challenges of our industry is that women have had to choose in the past to be moms or be professionals within the ad sector. Nancy, why can't they be both?
I think the issue is bigger than that. I think that many women think that they can't be both, and many agencies don't necessarily provide a culture or an environment that allows them to be both. But that's not the only reason we have for women opting out of the agency life, if you will. There are many, many reasons, and having children and families is just one of them. I think the bigger issue is that up until recently, I just don't think we had an environment that was friendly to women in general, let alone whether they were mothers. I just had this conversation over lunch today with somebody about as recently as 10 years ago in an agency, when you walked into a creative department, it was a lot like walking into a locker room after a football game. There was a lot of male on male humor. There was a lot of humor that wasn't necessarily gender friendly. And I think that some of that still prevails, although I'm happy to say I believe that it's less so. But it's that environment that just has not been friendly to women in general.
50% of the population are women. 70 to 80% of all consumer spending is being done by women. Women control $20 trillion in annual spending globally, and that keeps rising. With so few women in leadership positions in marketing and advertising, is mom a bad word?
I think it was for a long time, Scott. I think I can remember myself having a conversation with a creative director about a strategic brief that was going to be targeted at moms, and he said, yeah, no, I don't do moms. And I think part of that was because for a long time, the way the industry celebrated the work through the award shows wasn't necessarily going to happen if mom was the target. And consequently, we got into this vicious cycle of just kind of the same humor over and over and over again that was not targeted to moms or parents, for that matter. And so I think that for a long time, mom was a dirty word, but I think you're seeing it embraced more and more now.
Is this change happening overnight?
I don't think it was quite overnight, but I think that there's now a collective of both men and women, but primarily women, who are really pushing this and making sure that people are mindful of the 50-50 ratio, at least to have gender balance when things don't seem right and you see new hires being made that are the same old, excuse me, but you keep seeing white males over and over and over again. People are calling it out now and not allowing that to just continue without a discussion.
Is there something specifically that's happened that sort of put that on the spotlight, or is it just that it's just the accumulation of a lot of effort by a lot of different people who have been pushing it? Or is there something that's really, broken the camel's back, or why is this happening now?
I think there's, as I said, a huge groundswell of people who just have said, I'm not going to take it anymore, and I'm going to call it out when I see it. That's number one. Number two, you have the phenomena like the 3% conference that have really put the notion of women creative directors and the lack of them on the map, and people are discussing it way more openly than they used to. And then certainly, I won't comment on lawsuit itself, but the lawsuit that was filed in federal court by an employee of J. Walter Thompson against the agency and some individuals really heightened this to a place where people felt compelled to talk about it. And I personally felt compelled to talk about it at our conference just around a month ago, because I think there was an awful lot of talk that this was an isolated incident and that this didn't really go on as much as people think that it does, and it does. And I wanted to make sure that I did not let that just go hide in a corner somewhere. And that I said openly that it goes on way more often than you think. Whether it happened at JWT or not, I don't know. But what I can tell you is that the kind of behavior that was outlined in that lawsuit happens more often than you know.
Is this good for clients and their businesses?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that the way that consumers respond to advertising now, in terms of you immediately know whether you hit the right note or didn't hit the right note, and they'll let you know on social if they think you created a big faux pas, I think that it's going to force us to make sure that we're always looking at the work through the eyes that they want to be viewed as.
What is wrong with the structures of the past? What has to change for a mom to feel that she can be both a respected professional as well as a happy mother?
I think for many years, and certainly I fell into this category, we as an industry believed that, it was going to be late nights and weekends. And if you were working on a new business pitch, it would probably be an overnighter. And we accepted that behavior as the norm for this industry. And if you look to the person on your left or the person on your right and they weren't doing that, then they weren't working hard enough. And that was the culture that we created, that you didn't feel like you could even leave to go home and kiss your kids goodnight or tuck them in or, God forbid, go to their baseball game. At the same time, as somebody who never had children, I always was made to feel that like I was the one who was going to stick around because I didn't have kids to go home to. So, I think we just have to create a more humanistic environment for us all to live in, no matter whether we're male, female, mom or not mom, so that it isn't the pressure to work 24/7, 365 days a year.
Will a more human environment improve performance, better ideas, and better output?
People perform better when they feel like they are valued, when they feel like they can be a whole person and not have to compartmentalize themselves just based on a 9-to-5 schedule. But that said, I will say that it has to start from the top. Because if that behavior isn't modeled from the very top of the organization, then people aren't going to believe that it's actually acceptable.
The moment a woman knows that she's going to be a mother, there must be a lot of anxiety when she goes into her agency to let them know. Will this movement remove the bias from the workplace?
I think that as we increase the number of females in leadership positions, and we are starting to see that happen, that you will have a much different approach to the entire work environment than what we've had in the past. I mean, not just advertising agencies, but the entire work structure was and the way people worked at work was built around it was going to be a man who was going to come in and do this job, and his wife would stay home and take care of the family. That was just the way our society was structured. And I think as we've broken those norms apart and we've started to be more inclusive, and oh, by the way, men who want to be home with their kids too, you're starting to see more and more of the movement in that direction, and it's less and less frightening for a woman to go in and talk to their boss and say, hey, I'm going to go out on maternity leave. That said, one of the scariest parts about that from all my friends who have had kids is, okay, so we have rules in this country, and many agencies have rules that say when you come back, there will be a job for you. But if I was an account person running the biggest piece of business in the agency and I went out on maternity leave for 3 or 6 months, somebody had to cover that while I was gone. And chances are that person has taken over and done admirably. And I may end up on a smaller piece of business that doesn't get as much attention when I come back. So I think we all have to think about what do these career paths look like that allow somebody to go out on either maternity or paternity leave and come back and still feel like they're a valued member of the organization.
Is it possible that this is going to be easier to see through now that we're living in this kind of gig economy where a lot of senior people prefer to be independent contractors, so people actually don't mind stepping in for 6 months while a woman becomes a mother and has, you know, a child and decides to take 6 months and raise the child and then decide to come back. Now there should be a lot more flexibility because we're living in a time when there's just so many different ways of working than there was maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. No question. Again, yeah. I think it's going to depend a lot on whether the culture of the agency or the work environment supports that. And I also think you're starting to see as clients are moving to many more project-based assignments, that's really going to be the staffing of the future anyway, because you're going to have to staff up and staff down based on what the project is that you're getting from each client.
So do you think, I mean, the advertising industry for many years led culture and led society in many ways. Do you think now the advertising industry is actually fallen behind and is actually catching up to how society has changed and, in fact, maybe even clients?
That's a generalization that I wouldn't want to paint the entire industry with. I think that, you know, we have many, as members, we have many different kinds and sizes and types of agencies. And I think some have had a harder time adjusting to this new way of working than others, but others embraced it and really jumped on it. And when you see places where they've embraced this, what you'll find many times is there's a woman at the top of that organization. I think that women drive change differently, and they drive different kinds of change than men do. Now, again, I don't want to make a generalization about a gender either, but I do think that as the generation that we're bringing on board now starts to move into leadership positions, they're going to look at the way we work very differently.
Millennials are asking, why are all these gaps still there? How does our industry have to change ahead of the avalanche of millennials that are seeking jobs?
First off, you have to talk to them, because this is the first generation that will not conform to our way of working. You know, when we came into the workforce, we looked at the people who were more senior than we were, and we modeled their behavior because that's what we were taught we were supposed to do when you go into the workforce. But this generation refuses to conform, and they're going to have their own way of working that's not going to look like ours, and we need to find a way to accept that. And I think the agencies that are embracing that are the ones that are having the most success with not only attracting talent but retaining talent. And, you know, it's a new way of thinking about this. We were taught, you don't leave until your boss leaves. Well, these kids, when you talk to them about, oh, no, I got to get out of here because I am teaching a photography class tonight, because this is not their whole life. They talk about themselves very differently than the way we talked about ourselves. If somebody would have asked me in my 20s what I did for a living, my answer would have been, I'm an account person at an ad agency. You ask them that generation, they'll say, well, I'm an account person at an ad agency, and I write a fashion blog, and I do photography on the weekends, because that's how they define themselves. So us thinking that we're going to impose our 9-to-5 way of working on their life isn't going to work for them, and we have to adjust to that.
Do you have any advice to students out there who are sitting there thinking about whether they should get in this industry or not?
It's one of the most fabulous industries that you can get into. Every single day you presented with a new problem and a different problem. Every single day you get to work with some of the brightest, most fun people that you could ever imagine. And really, I think the great thing about it is that with all of the different channels that we have to use to put messages out there, if you're a creative person at all, this definitely is an industry that you would just fall in love with. And I really have always loved the notion that when you work in an agency, you get to work on anything from candy bars to pet stores. And who would think that your brain would be able to go back and forth like that? But if that's the kind of challenge that you love, then this is the perfect business for young people to get into.
Does technology change things for women?
The tools that we have available to us, I mean, it's very rare for me to quit working at 5 o'clock. Even if I leave at 5 o'clock, I'm still working until 7:30 or 8 o'clock at night, but not, I don't feel oppressed by that. I feel it gives me freedom to live my other life at the same time that I'm getting the work done that I need to get done. And I think that that also makes it a lot easier for women to be successful, because women are great multitaskers. And they can do all kinds of things at the same time. It's part of our nature and it's part of our gender. And so I think with the environment that we work in now, it's another reason why you're starting to see women rise to the top.
I appreciate groups that advocate for women, but does this conversation need to happen between men and women?
I think this conversation needs to be had between men and women as much as it needs to be had with women locking arms together. I think that we all succeed when everybody looks at each other and says, what can I learn from that person? And not, she doesn't look like me.
There seems to be a lot of men who are vocally behind this movement too.
I have to tell you, after I gave my speech, I've had so many men come to me either via email or by phone call saying, I want to be a part of this movement. What do I need to do? I had another agency CEO male who wrote me a long email saying, you know, I've decided I'm going to make some changes in the way I go about hiring. I'm not going to look at a name on a resume. I will not allow resumes to be put in front of me with a name on it. I just want to see the person's background and experience, because I know I'm bringing some unconscious bias into the way I'm looking at resumes and people. And I think, again, going beyond just the gender issue, we need to get better at checking our biases and thinking differently about who we want to work with and what kind of various viewpoints we want. Because just because somebody doesn't look like you, act like you, have a background like you, doesn't make them different. It makes them valuable.
You must represent the future because of your views, and you make a great role model, I think, for a lot of young women that come into the industry and see that this whole industry is represented by Nancy, who's the head of the 4A's. So that is a great starting point. And then the speeches that you've made recently and the movement that you're helping to escalate is really great.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate you spending some time with us. These are great insights. And Nancy Hill, thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you, Scott.
All right. Take care.
Thank you for joining our uprising today and listening to our show. If you missed the show, or if you want to find out more about who was on, or if you want to learn more about how to create your own uprising, please go to uprisingmovements.com. You can also download this uprising program from iTunes. Uprising was produced by Nicola Keneally and Adam Helen, with special help from Melanie Boardman, Karin Drakenberg, Philippa Freeman, Brianna Campbell, Fashad Faroudi, Mark Bruzzi, Will Isom, James Politi, and Jonathan Weeks. My name is Scott Goodson, and you've been listening to Uprising. What we can learn about movements and uprisings that are shaping our world in business, in society, and in between. For more on cultural movements and movement marketing, be sure to pick up a copy of the best-selling book Uprising, How to Build a Brand and Change the World by Sparking Cultural Movements, available on Amazon.com.
Music for Uprising composed by Charles Duchateau.